Welcome to the Bill Barnwell Show. I'm Bill Barnwell, ESPN. We are here on Wednesday, June 13th, 2018. World Cup is about to start. Very excited about that. But today, before that, we're going to talk a couple other sports. We're going to get to the NBA and the LeBron James sweepstakes with Kevin Pelton a little later on. But joining me first to talk about the New England Patriots, who always manage to be in the news. There is no downtime somehow with the New England Patriots joining me to discuss their receiving core, which is in flux and has seemingly been in flux for months now. It's in essence Doug Kide. Doug, how are you?
I'm doing fantastic. How are you doing, Bill?
I'm great. I am excited to discuss the Patriots because they are always a fascinating team, perhaps not always in ways we expect. And we'll get to Rob Gronkowski in a minute, but obviously the big news that's broken with the Patriots in the past week is the four-game suspension that Julian Edelman appears to be undergoing for the first four games of this upcoming NFL season. From what you've heard, it certainly has to seem like this is a shock to the Patriots, no?
Yeah, I believe so. I mean, it's possible that they found out about it within the last month or so, but, you know, as they were drafting a wide receiver and signing Jordan Matthews over free agency, trading for Cordarrelle Patterson, I don't get the sense that they were aware of this at that point. That was too early in the offseason, so it was kind of fortunate that they brought in so many wide receivers with this on the horizon as an unknown.
No, I mean, is there a player you think on the current roster, whether it be someone like Jordan Matthews who has experience playing in the slot, or Chris Hogan, or a Philip Dorsett, is there someone on the roster who you think can really step in for Edelman on a like-for-like basis in this Patriots offense?
There's no, I don't think that there's a one Edelman replacement. And complicating matters is the fact that Danny Amendola is a Miami Dolphin as well, mm-hmm. because obviously in the past, the Patriots could plug in Danny Amendola in that slot role, but Julian Edelman really plays two roles in the Patriots offense. He plays that old Deion Branch Z receiver role in two receiver sets, and then he kicks inside to the slot in three receiver sets. So you kind of have to replace two players in replacing Edelman for those first four games of the season. I think that in an ideal world, the top three wide receivers in those first four games of the season would be Chris Hogan at either the X or the Z, Kenny Britt, and Jordan Matthews. But that really largely depends on how Britt and Matthews assert themselves during the spring practices that just passed, in the training camp that's upcoming, and preseason, because there's really no guarantee that either one of those guys will even make the roster. And if they don't, then you're talking about guys like Philip Dorsett, who I was not impressed by last year on the Patriots, or mm-hmm. or young slot receiver types like Braxton Berrios and Riley McCarron. So there's not a one-for-one replacement here, but it does certainly increase the chances of someone like Britt or Dorsett at least making the roster. And Jordan Matthews, his experience in the slot certainly is helpful now with Amendola in Miami and Edelman facing this four-game suspension.
All right, Doug, let's get to Rob Gronkowski in a minute. First, just wanted to talk about our partners at SeatGeek. Of course, if you listen to the Bill Barnwell Show, you know SeatGeek has been around since the beginning. And the reason we keep them around, in part because they pay us, I'm not going to lie, but also in part because they're great. I use them quite frequently when I'm traveling around. I want to go to a game that I don't have tickets to. I go on SeatGeek.com. I went and purchased Cubs tickets literally yesterday using SeatGeek and got a great deal. And I know that when I go to Chicago, the tickets are going to be there. I don't have to be concerned about getting false tickets. SeatGeek takes tickets from all over the web from reliable sources. They use their deal score technology to rate the tickets, so I know I'm getting a good deal. I think I had a 98 yesterday. I feel very comfortable with a 98. That's fantastic. But SeatGeek's not going to lie to you. They're not going to tell you that tickets at a bad deal are going to be good for you. They're trying to get you the best deal possible. And they're going to get you reliable tickets. You're going to get them on time. You're going to have to go to games that you do not have tickets to that you want to go see. Granted, the NFL still months away. The NBA just finished up. NHL just finished up. But of course, Major League Baseball is going on. MLS is going on. Summer concerts. Anything you want to go to that requires a ticket, you can get for a great deal at SeatGeek. And even better, you can get $20 off your first SeatGeek purchase today by using my promo code, which is Barnwell, B-A-R-N-W-E-L-L. Use that promo code on the SeatGeek app after you download it. You get $20 back on your first SeatGeek purchase. Can't beat that deal. Go to the SeatGeek app, look for tickets, go buy some, and enter my promo code Barnwell to get $20 back on your first SeatGeek purchase today. Now let's get back to the show. All right, Doug, so obviously Edelman missed all of the 20 17 season, I should say, excuse me, with that torn ACL he suffered right before the campaign began. And the Patriots offense was good. Granted, they had Brandon Cooks, who was is not going to be on the roster this year. I mean, in terms of watching the Patriots play last year, do you think they really missed Edelman over the course of the season?
Yeah, I think they did. There were certainly some games more than others where they missed him. But, I mean, like you said, Brandon Cooks is gone. And then, as I mentioned earlier, Danny Amendola is gone. So really taking all three of those receivers out definitely hurts. I mean, you still have Chris Hogan, but Hogan had some injuries last year. And, you know, I don't think anyone wants Chris Hogan to be your number one wide receiver heading into the season. But, some of those guys I mentioned, like Kenny Britt and Jordan Matthews, have had a lot of experience in the NFL, so it's not as if the Patriots wide receiver core is going to be in dire straits for the first 4 weeks of the season, but I think they'll miss Edelman a lot more in those four games than they did last year just because of who they still had last year.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it makes total sense. Is there someone you think outside of the organization at the moment, a free agent, someone who might be available via trade, or someone who you think it makes sense for the Patriots to try and go after?
There's some kind of interesting names out on the free agent market. I think that the biggest names are Dez Bryant or Jeremy Maclin or someone like that. But there are actually some former Patriots out on the open market right now. Kamar Aiken is a former practice squad guy with the Patriots who had some good seasons there with the Ravens. Mm-hmm. He's still a free agent. You've got Michael Floyd, who had a very brief tenure with the Patriots before they won the Super Bowl in 2016, who's still out there. So, I mean, there are some kind of intriguing names who at least have some experience in the Patriots offense who are still available, but I wouldn't anticipate the Patriots would grab one of those guys before training camp. I think that it would take an injury to have to, you know, further replenish that wide receiver core in order to actually spend money to bring one of those guys on board.
Mm-hmm. So after the suspension was leaked, or reported, I suppose, I don't want to say leaked, it was reported obviously in a lot of places, there was a quote from Alex Guerrero where I don't want to mislead. I don't want to insinuate anything that's incorrect, but I think it is fair to say that he basically said, not my fault when it came to Edelman. He did not take any blame for the suspension. Basically, Edelman, you know, trains with a lot of people, and who knows if one of those people were involved. Did the statement surprise you that Guerrero would be so upfront and sort of throwing Edelman and throwing the other people who train Edelman underneath the bus?
Surprise is an interesting word. I guess I wasn't surprised that he did it just because he's released kind of bizarre statements in the past. After the Seth Wickersham report came out earlier this year, before the Super Bowl and everything, Alex Guerrero released a very vague statement, which left everyone kind of scratching their heads and asking, what did that just say? This one was certainly a lot more direct in kind of throwing Edelman under the bus, saying that he was disappointed. I think that he probably could have worded it a lot better, but I don't really think a statement was necessary at all. I know that people immediately started connecting the dots between TB12 and Edelman having a steroid suspension, saying, oh, what are they feeding them there at TB12? Mm-hmm. But I don't think that was a – I don't think you have to respond to those kind of accusations or those kind of connections, because it was people like Dan Shaughnessy who are kind of known for being trolls of the Boston media or, the Felgers and Mazes of the world who were doing it. I don't think that anyone overly credible was saying, oh, man, I mean, if – you know, he goes to the TB12 center and takes steroids, then what are they giving him there? Because a lot of guys on the Patriots have gone to TB12. Mm-hmm. Tom Brady has never been suspended for steroids, and none of those other guys have ever gotten in trouble with PEDs. So I think there was just kind of a May or June storyline that people were clinging on to that wasn't necessarily needed to respond to, because I think that, you know, these guys go to a lot of places, and you don't point to an NFL training staff and say, oh, they must be feeding them steroids. This is something that a player would likely be doing on their own.
Mm-hmm. Well, one of the people who does train at TB12 is Rob Gronkowski, who is also in the news. There were rumors, reports of some credibility, some maybe not some credibility, who knows. But there were suggestions that the Patriots were interested in trading Rob Gronkowski and actually had a Rob Gronkowski trade lined up that was vetoed by, among other people, Robert Kraft, who was, of course, the owner of the New England Patriots and would be able to veto such a trade. Kraft came out and denied that report wholeheartedly, but it does seem like there is at least some smoke to this fire and that the Patriots were considering trading Gronkowski. So do you buy the idea that they were close to a deal, and do you buy sort of the logic behind trading Rob Gronkowski at this point of his career?
I buy into the logic that the Patriots were willing to trade Rob Gronkowski up until 3 days before the NFL draft, because that was still the point where Gronk was unsure or whatever if he was going to play in 2018. He gave the commitment that he was going to play on the Patriots the next day, 2 days before the NFL draft. So I could definitely see why Bill Belichick would be shopping Rob Gronkowski, not knowing whether if the guy was going to play or not, just try to get something for him in case he decides not to play or doesn't want to play for the Patriots, whatever it is. After that meeting, it seems like all those trade talks went away. The report out there that Tom Brady threatened to retire if Rob Gronkowski was traded, those are not true. The fact that the reports that came out that Brady was going to be, or that Gronkowski was still talked about being traded last week, those were not true. But I do buy that there was some trade talks with Gronkowski at some point. And just before we get too far into Gronkowski, I actually wanted to say one more thing on Edelman, too. And that's the report that Edelman failed his test because they found something, an unknown substance that they were further testing. I just find that report to be very suspicious, because the only people who can actually say what someone failed a test for or not is the player. The NFL can't do that. There's $500,000 fines that prevent anyone from leaking that information. So it's really up to the player to tell the media or to tell whoever why they failed a test. That's why for years guys kept saying that they were taking Adderall, until the NFL actually changed that rule and said, okay, well, if you test positive for Adderall outside the season, then it's a substance abuse failure. It's not a PED failure. So I'm just very suspicious about the whole, you know, tested positive for something that they couldn't, you know, they didn't know what it was. And, I'm, you know, you can question the credibility there, but the former team doctor of the Chargers came out and said that a player can't fail a PED test for an unknown substance. So I know that a lot of people are quick to bash the NFL and say that, you know, how can you suspend a guy for testing positive for an unknown substance? I'm not sure if they can. And the only reason why we're hearing about any of that is because the player would have leaked that, not the league. So I just wanted to get that out there.
You don't think he's using alien technology?
I mean, it's certainly possible. I would be less surprised if TB12 was feeding their players alien technology than I would about steroids. But yeah, I don't know what this substance that they can't discover is. It smells a little fishy to me.
It does seem strange, I have to admit. What else seems strange? Another thing I wanted to ask you about when it came to Rob Gronkowski. The reports have suggested that the two teams who had offers on the table for Gronk were the Tennessee Titans, who, of course, have several former expatriates in their organization, in their building, and the San Francisco 49ers, who, of course, traded for Jimmy Garoppolo earlier this year. Why would the Patriots, having traded Jimmy Garoppolo to the Niners in a trade that has been widely panned and looks quite dumb in hindsight, why would they send them another superstar player? Why would they send Gronk to the Niners of all places?
Yeah, that's another part of that I just don't buy. I think that was attached to the report that, you know, Tom Brady was threatening retirement if Rob Gronkowski was traded. I don't know what teams the Patriots were talking to about trading Rob Gronkowski. I guess I could see maybe wanting to trade him out of the conference, and they do have the relationship there with the 49ers. Maybe they were trying to, you know, get the 49ers to spend a little bit extra so that the deal for Garoppolo didn't look quite as bad in hindsight. But I don't know. I'm not sure if I can really buy the teams that are attached to that. I certainly buy the fact that Gronkowski was being shopped. I'm just not sure if it was to the 49ers or Titans.
Even Tennessee doesn't make a ton of sense, given that, you know, they have Delanie Walker already on board. They who was the tight end they drafted last year who looked pretty good in a limited role?
Jonnu Smith.
Yeah, Jonas Smith, their second tight end, was pretty good as a rookie for a second tight end. So, I mean, not like they even desperately need a tight end. So there are places where you figure Gronk would make sense, but I'm skeptical of those two landing points.
I think, to some degree, if that part of the report, you know, I don't know who the source was on that. I don't know who was feeding anyone the information, but, you know, if someone was to make up that information, if the source was to make it up and feed it to a reporter, those are two very believable teams that the Patriots would be trading with, are the Titans, who have John Robinson as their GM and Mike Vrabel as their head coach, and the San Francisco 49ers, who the Patriots have dealt with in the past.
And we all know that the Rams are the only team who trade for veteran players, and they would have traded for Rob Gronkowski. That would be the only possible landing point. In terms of the reasons they would trade Gronk, obviously there were injury concerns, and there was an element where it seems like where Gronk was not sure whether he wanted to play, and of course, if he was going to get traded, you figure they'd only get something in return if he did play. So, do you think there was a thing where, because Gronk was unsure about whether he wanted to keep playing football, that Bill Belichick kind of gave up on Rob as a going concern and kind of felt like he was not someone he wanted to commit to if he wanted a new contract?
Yeah, I think that that's part of it. I think that, you know, part of it is just the fact that, okay, so if Rob Gronkowski is contemplating retirement this offseason, then what happens next offseason? Do the Patriots have to get out in front of things and sign a tight end or trade for a tight end or draft a tight end just in case Gronk decides to retire next offseason? I think there's just a lot of questions there with Gronk about when he will decide to hang it up, if this is his last year, if now that he's contemplating retirement, if he is fully committed, when he is out on the field. So I think that the idea to trade him just comes with all of the question marks that are still involved with him. And I can kind of see that. I mean, I certainly would not trade Rob Gronkowski, especially after they traded Brandon Cooks. And now in hindsight with Julian Edelman's suspension, I certainly wouldn't trade him. But, I mean, if you can't trust a guy, if Bill Belichick has said throughout the years that dependability is more important than ability, then there's not a lot of dependability with Gronk moving forward if he's already contemplating retirement with 2 years left on his contract. So I think that that would be the main reason. Obviously, it's really tough to give up on the best tight end in the NFL, but you do kind of have to start planning for the future at some point, and Gronk, more than other players, is kind of putting that future up in the air.
Mm-hmm. Do you get a sense that, you know, the Patriots sort of are envisioning their future with Rob Gronkowski right now? I mean, it does seem like this is an organization that does look 2 or 3 years into the future at all times, but at the same time, like, you know, even with Edelman healthy and unsuspended, this was not a dominant receiving core to begin with after trading Brandon Cooks. So if you trade Cooks and you trade Rob Gronkowski, granted we don't know who they would have drafted if they'd made those trades, but it just seems like you're leaving Tom Brady's receiving core really thin heading into what might be one of the final seasons of his career.
Yeah, I would definitely agree with that. Like you said, I don't know who they would have drafted. I doubt they would have traded for a tight end. I don't think that a lot of teams are interested in trading for starting caliber tight end. So it would have really left the cupboard, I'm not sure if I would say bare, but one interesting thing here is that when the rumors did come out on Friday that the Patriots could trade or do whatever with Rob Gronkowski, some of us media types were like, oh, wow, I guess the Patriots were just as impressed with Jacob Hollister as we were during minicamp, because Jacob Hollister, who is, you know, maybe the Patriots' number 2 or 3 tight end, was really, really good in minicamp. And granted, these are non-contact sessions, it's a passing camp, you kind of have to take everything that happens with a grain of salt, but he looked like an NFL-caliber tight end in those minicamp sessions. They liked him enough to keep him around all season. I wouldn't be surprised if he was the number 2 tight end this season and got a lot more work maybe in the passing game than Dwayne Allen did in that role last year.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. So is there any player at this point on the Patriots roster, given their history of trading even, you know, guys like Logan Mankins, Richard Seymour, players who you figure might have been career Patriots, is there anyone you think they would not be willing to trade at one point or another under Bill Belichick?
Oof. I mean, I guess Brady. I guess that would really be the only answer, because I would think that might be one of those situations where Kraft does intervene in that case. But, I mean, I think that almost anyone else, in the history of the franchise would probably have been up for grabs. I mean, Belichick certainly has his guys that he likes more than others. He loves Devin McCourty. He loves Daron Harmon. But, I mean, he also loves LeGarrette Blount, and LeGarrette Blount has had two different tenures with the Patriots and has been on two different teams since he joined the Patriots. So, no, I don't think that, you know, I don't know if it's loyalty. I don't know if it's just being smart with the organization, but it seems like he would be willing to trade almost anyone. And I think that once you start seeing guys coming up on the last year of their contract, right now that's defensive end Trey Flowers and guard Shaq Mason, those guys could be available. I mean, it's just the way the Patriots conduct business a lot of the times. And we saw it with Chandler Jones. We saw it with Jamie Collins. Pretty much anyone, I think, other than Brady, who could give the Patriots value in a trade would be up for grabs.
Mm-hmm. So two more questions for you, Doug. Number one, what are the chances Rob Gronkowski is on the Patriots roster week one of 2019, so the year after this one?
I think they're actually pretty strong because I think that they will get that contract done this offseason. I think that they will make some adjustments to it. I'm not sure if it will be an extension at this point or if they'll just increase the salary in 2018 or 2019. I guess that will be a little bit telling. Mm-hmm. If they increase the salary for only 2018, then chances drop precipitously. But I would still certainly say over 50% that he's on the roster for week one in 2019. But I would certainly look when that contract comes down to see how 2019 is affected.
Mm-hmm. So do you have a percentage?
I'll go 51%. How's that?
51%. Interesting. Okay. So last question for you, Doug.
I guess I go higher. That seems a little ominous. I guess, okay. I would say like
52%. Oh, okay, 65. That's a little more impressive.
Yeah, 52 would be a, yeah.
65 is fine. That's a good number to go with. Final question for you. As someone who is a connoisseur of snacks, what is the best snack you've had recently?
Ooh, best snack I've had recently. That is a very difficult question.
You're someone, of course, who on your Instagram, at Doug Kite, I believe, if I'm not mistaken, frequently are grading snacks using the proprietary Doug's Bud system. But I want to know, is there a snack you had recently that you're particularly fond of?
I feel like we've been on kind of a negative turn on Doug's Buds recently, where we've been trying a lot of things that have been a little bit disappointing, but the chocolate peanut butter Oreos that they just came out with, those are pretty good. I think that those got, you know, four or five buds on my end. So I would recommend those. I think they had kind of like a graham cracker type cookie. Another one actually, Little Debbie makes a s'mores snack roll. It's like a Swiss roll, but it's s'mores flavored. I would suggest either the s'mores one or the zebra cake version of their snack roll. It's very good. And an extra tip here, throw it in the fridge before you have it, and the frosting kind of solidifies a little bit, and I think it's even better that way.
You are very close to getting a Little Debbie sponsorship, Doug. That is well known.
That's what I'm aiming for.
I don't blame you. Doug Kite, of course, frequent guest on the show. Thank you so much. Where can people check out more of your football content and your snack content?
Go to Twitter. I am on there at Doug Kite, Instagram at Doug Kite, and Nesson.com. And in a couple days here, I will be going on my annual 5-week NFL vacation. So might not see a ton of content up there coming up, but follow me for the upcoming NFL season for sure.
All right, Doug, thank you so much. We're going to come back after the break here with Kevin Pelton, talk about LeBron James here on the Bill Barnwell Show. So in 2017, the Better Business Bureau heard more than 5,000 complaints about alarm companies, and that put home security in the top 10% of the most complained about industries. It's not a fun experience when it comes to most home security companies, and we all need home security one way or another. So, fortunately for us, our friends at SimpliSafe have fixed home security. They got rid of contracts. There's no hidden fees, and they work hard to earn their customers' business. Instead of relying on tricks and fine print, there's no, you know, magic hidden fee that you're going to get out of nowhere that you're going to regret. SimpliSafe is forward. They're upfront. You get what you're paying for it, and you're going to get a secure, comfortable home because SimpliSafe is a company that relies on good service and a great product to earn your business. And that's why, unlike some other companies I don't want to name, they have an A+ rating with their Better Business Bureau. Not even an A, not even like really good. They are impeccable with the Better Business Bureau and had an A+ rating for 10 years running with over 40,000 five-star reviews online. So you're getting the best protection you can possibly get with SimpliSafe, and you're getting reliable protection at a fair price. And if you want to learn more, you can go to simplisafe.com/Barnwell today. SimpliSafe, SimpliSafe.com/Barnwell, which is my last name, BARNWELL. Go there and you'll learn about protecting your home and your family with an A+ home security system. SimpliSafe.com/Barnwell. All right, welcome back to the Bill Barnwell Show. I'm Bill Barnwell, ESPN. Joining me now, frequent contributor to the podcast, friend of the show, some might say, Kevin Pelton of ESPN, to talk about, with the NBA Finals over, with the NBA season over, talk about the LeBron James sweepstakes. Now, I'm pretty sure, Kevin, we're the only people talking about this, so I'm happy we can get an exclusive here and talk about where LeBron James is going to go in the 2018 season.
It's an obscure little thing, but for some reason I have decided to pay attention to it.
Well, it's nice. It's impressive. It seems like a lot of teams in the NBA are going to be interested going after LeBron James. Makes sense. He's very good. He might be a free agent this year if he decides to move on. So I wanted to go through some teams, go through some possible destinations, and ask basically, is it possible? Do you think it's likely? Do you think it'd be a good fit? All those things that would come with adding LeBron James to your team. And granted, I think it's not going to be a bad fit for anybody. I think everyone wants LeBron James if they have the opportunity. But I kind of want to see if we can come to a conclusion for a team that makes the most sense or has the most to gain, perhaps, by adding LeBron James. So let's start with the simple one. Let's just start with the null hypothesis, which is that he stays with the Cavaliers. Do you think that is a viable thing for LeBron James at this point, even for a team that we just saw was able to make it all the way to the NBA Finals?
Yeah, I think the really interesting thing during the finals is how much LeBron kept talking about basketball IQ. And, you know, he talked about going to Miami and having the opportunity to play with other guys who saw the game like he did. Mm-hmm. And it seemed like a not so subtle subtweet of his Cleveland teammates, particularly after the end of game one, which apparently was quite frustrating for LeBron. he maybe didn't channel that in the most productive way, as it turns out. So I think you would have to see pretty dramatic roster overhaul if he were going to stay. And it feels like, you know, he's also talked about how decision is different than his past couple because now his kids are older.
Right.
They'll be more a part of this decision. So, you know, if they're wanting to stay in Cleveland, you know, maybe that changes things from that standpoint. But I think you'd have to see, you know, them, you know, I think the Cavaliers would really press him for some kind of conclusion, some kind of certainty on this before the draft a week from tomorrow so that they could trade that number 8 pick that they have courtesy of the Kyrie Irving deal for, you know, a veteran who is going to come in and give them a chance to, you know, not only compete with the teams in the East that are getting better, Boston and Philadelphia, but also try to somehow close what looked like a really enormous gap with Golden State in the finals.
Is there a realistic chance of the Cavaliers sort of reconstructing their team on the fly, given their current cap constraints and given, like you said, the main asset they have being that 8th overall pick? Could they really construct a team that would be competitive with the Warriors if LeBron did stay?
Probably not. I mean, it's going to be really tricky. I think the biggest thing that they would have going for them in that scenario is they've shown a willingness to pay this exorbitant tax bill, and it is going to cost them in terms of getting into the repeater tax if LeBron does decide to stay. But, you know, for example, an idea I pitched when there was talk of Kemba Walker possibly getting traded before the deadline was, you know, if the Cavs send that pick and at that point some expiring salary, they had Isaiah Thomas available to play that role and then take back not only Kemba but one of Charlotte's other contracts like Nicola Batum would be, you know, he's dramatically overpaid, but he's also the kind of useful role player who can play at both ends that you'd want against the Warriors. So you could improve that those kind of ways, but again, closing the gap entirely with the Warriors seems pretty close to impossible.
Sure. So let me throw out a alternative scenario. What if LeBron James went to the Golden State Warriors?
That's the doomsday scenario. As much as everyone says that, you know, Kevin Durant going to the Warriors ruined the NBA, LeBron going to the Warriors would truly, in fact, probably ruin the NBA. Turn it into wrestling.
But would that be that? For 1 year, would it not be wildly entertaining to see?
It would certainly be a fascinating experiment. So, you know, if the Warriors were going to do this, it would have to be, it would probably, like many of these teams, have to be a situation where LeBron opted into the final year of his contract before the June 29th deadline to pick up his player option and then got traded to the Warriors that way. I think there was a scenario where they could do it as a sign and trade, even though it would hard cap them in terms of the luxury tax. Actually, no, maybe not. They would have to take some extreme discounts if they were going to pull that off. So, you know, they have to do that, and then you'd have to build a trade package around either Klay Thompson or Draymond Green, and you would figure probably, given the relationship between Draymond Green and LeBron James, that it would probably be Klay going back to Cleveland as the centerpiece.
Yeah. I mean, it's what would your, just off the top of your head, your guess for your projected system? What would you project for the Warriors with LeBron, you know, replacing Klay Thompson? Would, did you say above 70 you'd figure?
See, it's weird because, you know, it would take the Warriors not caring that much about the regular season probably to a new level of extreme if they had LeBron. So maybe they wouldn't win. I mean, you'd probably on accident win 63 or 64, something in the mid 60s, which is an amazing sentence to say out loud. But it's really the question of just like, could they go undefeated in the playoffs? That would be the only question about that team.
Yeah. Could they go 4-4-4? It's not. Not 4-4-4-4, I should say. Not out of the question. The West is pretty tough, though. Who knows? Speaking of the West, an obvious place, a team you wrote about a couple days ago, being a plausible landing spot for LeBron James, is the Houston Rockets. Is there a... I guess there is, because you wrote about it. I shouldn't lie and say that it's not a feasible path. But what's the path for LeBron James joining the Houston Rockets?
Okay, so this is another of those cases where opting in is the more sensible conclusion. And the good news is LeBron actually potentially makes more money by opting in next year than he does by becoming a free agent. He, you know, it's a trivial difference and it's not going to stop him from becoming a free agent, but it's also what helps makes this viable. And then Houston is going to have to scare up a lot of salary to send back in return, and probably not going to be able to include Ryan Anderson in that because of the fact that the Cavs in particular, but no one is going to want to take on the $42 million that Ryan Anderson is owed over the next two seasons here. So the package I ended up coming up with in that piece was built around Eric Gordon and PJ Tucker, which would be tough for the Rockets to give up two of the guys who, you know, played, I think they were among their four leaders in minutes played in the conference finals against the Warriors, playing key roles, both of them. But, you know, if you're getting LeBron James, you do it.
Right. Now, I feel weird saying this because, of course, LeBron James is going to make the Rockets better, but you already have two players who are, you know, with incredibly high usage rates, and James Harden and Chris Paul, who want the ball in their hands, even if they're not going to be shooting, or at least want the ball to work with. Adding LeBron James, who's another player who's going to take a ton of ISOs if he wants, it seems like they may not get the maximum return from LeBron James on offense that they would, you know, if he was adding to a different team, perhaps.
No, but it's also kind of difficult to construct a team that both, you know, is good enough to compete with the Warriors and also doesn't have a lot of other shot creators. I mean, that's going to be a really difficult needle to thread, and maybe there's a way to do it. But, you know, I think that it's similar to what I said when they added Chris Paul last June. You know, it's not whether they can do it, because all of these guys, you know, LeBron obviously is not a great spot-up shooter, but all of them are enough of a threat off the ball that they can be effective in that role. It's more a matter of, you know, the willingness to do it, to subjugate your own scoring. You know, presumably no one on the team is going to win the MVP, which, you know, James Harden is the presumptive favorite to do that when the award show happens later this month. But if they embrace it because of the fact that their viewpoint is, look, this is the only way we can get past the Warriors, they have such an amazing team, then I think it is possible that they, I mean, they certainly can make it work.
Well, one team that it does seem like would be in line to add a wing, who, or I guess LeBron James is anything he wants to be, but, you know, a player who is going to take a ton of shots and take the ball quite frequently, are the Philadelphia 76ers, who, granted, have Joel Embiid, have Ben Simmons. Markelle Fultz should seemingly be playing more frequently next year, you would hope. But it seems like he would be a perfect fit for what their roster currently needs, no?
Well, Philly is probably the best fit from the standpoint of it's the easiest for them to fit him in. Like, they let their free agents go. J.J. Redick would be a tough loss. And, you know, Marco Bellinelli and Ersan Ilyasova played important roles in the playoffs. But again, you do this because it's LeBron. And then the only thing that they really have to do to make it work is trade away Jared Bayless, who's making $8.5 million in the last year of his contract. You know, get maybe move a few pieces at the end of the bench. And then they get to that max level of space without any significant pain to their, you know, core going forward. The issue with the Sixers is, you know, you talk about that sharing the ball aspect from Houston. I think it's a much bigger issue in Philly.
Really?
Because of the fact that Ben Simmons has not shown the ability to be a threat without the ball in his hands. Mm-hmm. You know, I think it's possible that he could develop into an elite cutter, the same way that Dwayne Wade, you know, was able to be effective playing opposite LeBron, despite the fact that he's not really known for his outside shooting. And LeBron may want to play more off the ball, you know, going forward, you know, as he's in his mid-30s and not be as ball dominant. So, mm-hmm. you know, I think if he did go to Philly, that would be a sign to some extent that he plans to transition into a slightly different role. But, you know, I think that it's weird because on the one hand, you know, in terms of like young talent to grow around LeBron and give him a chance for to compete for many years in the future, mm-hmm. Philly is by far the best option. But in terms of the on-court fit, I think in some ways, you know, among the realistic options, at least, they're probably the worst of those.
Interesting. I would expect it exactly the opposite. This is why you're on the show, and it's not just me for a half hour spouting out my bad NBA beliefs. It really is very helpful to have a guest who knows what he's talking about on the show. Let me throw out the Boston Celtics, of course, the team that took LeBron to 7 games in the Eastern Conference Finals. They, of course, are getting Kyrie Irving back next year, which may create some problems with LeBron James and Kyrie Irving on the same roster. They're getting Gordon Hayward back from a serious ankle injury after he missed the final 81 games of the regular season and then all of the playoffs. Is this a thing where you add LeBron and kind of just hope you can figure the rest of it out later if you can? Or is that possible for the Celtics at this point? Or you think they just stick with, you know, what they have and hopefully try and find a way to bring back Marcus Smart?
I mean, this would probably be another opt-in and trade scenario. Mm-hmm. So the question is what you're sending back in return. Because, you know, the interesting thing about the Celtics is they don't really have any bad salary. And this seems like, hey, this is an amazing thing. But when you're trying to construct these, like, packages to bring in a high paid star, mm-hmm. you're basically going to have to, in this case, send out one of Kyrie Irving, Al Horford, or Gordon Hayward is the centerpiece in a LeBron trade. And again, you would truly do that. And I think the Celtics, like from a pure basketball standpoint, they make a lot of sense because of the fact that, you know, someone like Jaylen Brown, Terry Rozier, even Tatum in the way, Jason Tatum in the role that he played this season, although I think we expect to see him grow into a larger role. Like these are precisely the kind of, you know, two-way role players that you would want around LeBron who are most kind of maximized by his presence and not necessarily cramped by, you know, what he's going to do with the ball in his hands. Even Hayward, I think, probably fits into that category, and then Horford does too. Kyrie's probably the guy who, in many ways, fits the worst with LeBron, which is funny, in as much as they played together for several seasons. Mm-hmm. I don't think he's going back to Cleveland in a trade, sadly. So, you know, that probably would not be the scenario you'd have. I mean, in basketball terms, it would make a lot of sense because also then, you know, the Celtics have the advantage that they've just got all of these draft picks still coming. Mm-hmm. Next year's Sacramento pick, unless it's number one overall. They're getting a pick from Memphis that is lottery protected that has the chance to be pretty good. So they would be able to keep adding young, cheap talent around LeBron and this core that they already have. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that might, I think over the long run, this would probably be the best team with LeBron, but also given, you know, his rivalry with the Celtics over the years and Celtics fans in particular taking great glee in mocking and booing LeBron, this seems like the hardest one for me to envision actually happening.
It does.
At least the realistic ones.
Right. Well, I mean, you know, the Celtics did, according to Adrian Wojnarowski today, in his report on Kawhi Leonard, the Celtics apparently made an offer for Kawhi Leonard at the trade deadline, which would have been fascinating. I don't know. You know, I wonder if it even would have happened if you know, Kawhi Leonard could have passed a physical at that point. But let me ask you this. What do you think that offer was? If you had to guess right now, obviously not knowing, what do you think the Celtics would have offered for Kawhi Leonard at the trade deadline?
Well, I guess now that they've actually traded for a star in Kyrie, we can't make the joke that they were offering, like, Gershon Yabusele and Semi Ojeleye.
They would never trade Gershon Yabusele. He is a core component of the Celtics rebuild.
He's untouchable. And, yes. Yeah, you would have to find some salary in there, so I guess Marcus Morris is probably in there. I think that's probably more of a kicking the tires kind of thing. Mm-hmm. I mean, the Spurs weren't realistically going to trade Kawhi at that point. It's more possible now. I think that's one of the interesting questions a few of these teams are going to have to answer, though, is, you know, you probably have, to some extent, a choice between, you know, using your cap space to try to make an imbalanced trade for Kawhi Leonard should he come available, or going after LeBron James. And in some ways, you know, for Philly, like, Kawhi Leonard actually makes more sense as a fit, I would say, than LeBron because of his shooting.
Well, on the flip side, what about the Spurs as a possible LeBron James landing point?
Yeah. And there was a time where it looked like the Spurs actually might have significant cap space this summer if LaMarcus Aldridge had opted out of his contract before signing an extension. Now that's pretty much gone, but there is like a distant outside path where they could possibly get to max cap space if all of their free agents opted out. Their potential free agents, notably Danny Green and Rudy Gay, have player options. And then if they were able to trade, you know, Pau Gasol and maybe get off some other salary, they could get to the point where they could sign LeBron outright to go with Kawhi Leonard and LaMarcus Aldridge and DeJounte Murray, who is a clutch sports guy and emerged as a starter for them last season. LeBron would have to really want to play for Pop, though, I think, for this to be a viable scenario.
I think if you're the Cavs and there's a possibility to have LeBron opt in and then trade him for LaMarcus Aldridge as part of the package of a LeBron trade, is that enough for you to sit there and feel satisfied with a LeBron opt in and trade?
I think you'd probably want to make that into a three-way trade because, you know, you're not going to be good enough to compete, and then Aldridge and Kevin Love are somewhat duplicative of their skills. I think they'd probably want to be rebuilding and getting younger and building around some of the guys they got at the deadline in that number eight pick rather than, you know, try to win 45 games next year.
So the obvious sort of favorite, for not favorite is the wrong word, but a team that has clearly been preparing for this for a long time, are the Los Angeles Lakers, who of course made a trade with the Cleveland Cavaliers during the season to help clear up more cap space. Obviously, financially, they can afford LeBron. If LeBron wants to compete for a title, though, is it enough for them to go out and, let's say they get Paul George, and it's LeBron James, Paul George, and then what's left on this Los Angeles Lakers roster? Is that enough to compete seriously in the West right now?
Probably not. I mean, I think, you know, the case for the Lakers here is, you know, a few years ago when they were trying to go out and sign free agents, the problem is basically their teams were going to be just those free agents and then whoever else they could sign from the minimum. Now you've got a scenario where the Lakers could, you know, by stretching Luol Deng, create enough cap space to make two max offers and still have Lonzo Ball and Brandon Ingram and Kyle Kuzma and then Josh Hart, who had a pretty nice rookie season as a 3-and-D guy and in some ways is probably the best fit alongside LeBron of all these players. But in terms of next year, that's probably too big of a leap to expect those kind of players to play key roles as you're taking on the Warriors in the conference finals or, you know, some sort of scenario like that, even if they have LeBron James and Paul George alongside them.
And, of course, at one point it seemed like the Clippers could plausibly be a fit for LeBron James, but that seems like it's almost an impossibility now, no?
Yeah, I mean, they could. There's scenarios where they could get to max cap space again, depending on their player options and who they were able to trade. But, especially, you know, Chris Paul, we've talked about the possibility of him and LeBron teaming up. They're close friends, both leaders in the Players Association. So the team that Chris Paul just left probably isn't the team that LeBron is going to.
It does seem like that would not make a ton of sense, but maybe he makes a mistake and signs with the wrong team by accident. The Heat, it feels like we should bring up the Heat, of course, because he went there previously. There is a relationship, perhaps a damaged relationship with Pat Riley. Dwayne Wade, who was on the Cavs, is back there now. Is there any reason to consider them besides the fact that LeBron was there a few years ago?
Yeah, I mean, he'd have to force his way there. They wouldn't have any leverage because they're miles over the salary cap as it is and most likely into the luxury tax. There's not necessarily a lot of really appealing, you know, sign and trade or opt-in and trade possibilities. So it would have to be LeBron basically forcing his way there, I guess.
Well, I mean, are there any other teams who you would figure are a wild card or a team that maybe, you know, has a better chance or might be a better fit than it might seem on the surface besides the ones we just talked about?
No, I think we've pretty much covered the realistic contenders.
Well, then in that case, I think you know what I'm about to get to. I'm going to ask you two questions. I'm going to ask you where you think LeBron James should go, or whether he should stay, whether he should go, given the different fits on court, off court for him. Of course, we can't. You know, it would be unrealistic to talk about what makes sense for his family. I don't think that's really our place to say. But in terms of the basketball fit, where it makes the most sense, and where you think LeBron James is going to go this offseason?
All right, so I was hoping that we were going to come to a clearer conclusion, because people keep asking me this question. I'm like, I don't know. They all seem kind of like decent but flawed. Mm-hmm. I guess the answer would probably be, especially if I'm LeBron and I'm not necessarily worried about, you know, this is going to be my final destination wherever I go. It's potentially going to be yet another stop in what has been a rather itinerant career for a superstar player. Mm-hmm. Then I would go to Houston, because I think in terms of the chance to win next year, they give you the best opportunity. They were close with the Warriors this year, you know, and despite Chris Paul's injury. And, you know, I think that they would be an appealing team, you know, even though they would lose some depth, give you up both Gordon and Tucker, plus Nene and some other spare parts. They would be able to, an attractive option for players in free agency to take, you know, to take a discount to go play for their room mid-level for $4.4 million, or even to play for the veterans minimum there. And I think they'd be able to rebuild some depth that way. So I think, you know, again, if the goal was to be in championship mode next year, Houston is probably the best choice. That should be the answer to where he is going to go.
Well, I mean, that's just where he should go, but where will he go, do you think?
My gut kind of says Lakers.
Really?
Yeah. And I do have a piece coming in the future days on how, you know, the Lakers might be able to have more than just Paul George and LeBron in terms of veterans on next year's team.
Wow. I can't believe I got tricked into using my podcast to build up a Kevin Pelton piece in the days to come. Man.
Little did you know, you thought I was writing that story to promote the podcast, but it was the other way around.
Well, we already have a piece on ESPN Today with the really cool art about how LeBron James could join every single team in the NBA. We didn't get to those teams, obviously, but I mean, the Lakers are a really fascinating opportunity because, you know, it always seems like they end up winning somehow and end up getting the players they want, and a LeBron James, Paul George, plus a bunch of young guys team is pretty interesting. I don't know if necessarily it's going to be a 65 win team, but what would you, again, off the top of your head, not asking you for a actual calculation, but just what would you project that team's win total to be?
I think somewhere in the 50s, right. I would say. Yeah, I mean, I think that's a pretty massive leap from where the Lakers were last year, but they were competitive in the second half of the season, in kind of the midpoint of the season. And when you add that kind of talent in addition to the improvement they can expect to see internally, I think, yeah, so somewhere in the mid to high 50s would be my expectation for that team, which, you know, would probably make it a better team than this year's Cavaliers.
Yeah, and that would be a 3 seed in the West. I mean, obviously, you would figure there aren't going to be 7 teams within 46 and 49 wins next year, but that would be typically a team that plays at home court in the first round of the NBA playoffs, so it's not the worst thing in the world. And you know, we will see it. It's going to be really fascinating to see. But Kevin Pelton, of course, always a pleasure to have you on. Where can people check out more of your work?
On the ESPN NBA page and at K Pelton on Twitter.
Well, I'm not going to make you talk about the Seahawks. If you want to finish up with any Seahawks thoughts, I'm leaving the space open to you. But I understand if you do not want to discuss them, given the general tenor of the franchise at this point.
Yeah, waking up to the Ryan Grigson news was not super exciting, but it's okay. The Pelton cast, the podcast I do with my brother on Seattle sports, we now shifted. We're a baseball heavy podcast now. The Mariners are great. The Huskies are in the College World Series. I actually watched college baseball for the first time in my life last weekend.
So really?
We're all about baseball in Seattle now.
Wow. Baseball city. Classic Major League Baseball city, Seattle. Kevin Pelton, thank you so much. All right, thanks so much to our guests today, Dakide of Nesson, Kevin Pelton of ESPN. More audio coming next week. I think we may do some World Cup stuff. We're going to do some football as well in the weeks to come. World football, American football, anything that involves people using a ball in one way or another, we'll probably get to it at some point during the show. Thanks so much for listening.